has poisoning souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. No one will be lost. No one will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, to do away with greed. Now let us fight to free the world, to fulfill that promise. Let us all unite.
Operation Nation, it is the 27th of March, 2015. Welcome, welcome. Free Your Mind Conference coming up, folks. If you're not familiar, or if you haven't heard, I'll be speaking at the Free Your Mind Conference. Bob Duskin is throwing that along with a couple other people, and it's about three RBN hosts that I know of are going to be there. It's quite a lineup. Should be interesting, and I'll be there all 3 days to shoot the breeze with anybody who wants to. That's freeyourmindconference.com, freeyourmindconference.com. Always, I'll also be, anyone who wants to join me anyway, we're going to go on a little tour of Philadelphia, all the Masonic sites there. I know there's a couple of people interested in that, so we'll just meet up, be sort of a unrehearsed kind of thing. Got a few sites I want to visit, and maybe you can bring your own, and it should be a good time. We're supposed to have KW on today, but I believe we didn't really secure our spot tonight. It was kind of just a mention, so I'm not sure if he'll be joining us. I told him to call in if he gets around to it. Looks like Mr. Tuskin is actually on the line. Bob Tuskin. From the show After Mine, the Bob Tuskin Show. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Can't complain. Been busy as hell with this conference stuff, man.
Yeah, I knew. See, I knew you'd find a way to complain.
Yeah, exactly. You know me too well. It's in our blood. You know, it's part of the, you know, just like the horns that we hide underneath the little hats on our heads.
Oh, you could pretend they're not there. You can even talk about them like you know, that's the perfect trick, isn't it? You talk about it like it's not there. Unbelievable.
That's true.
So what's going on with the...
What's going on with what?
The conference, man.
Well, I wanted to know, you're flying in what day? Thursday, right? So, I'm flying in Thursday as well, and we had talked about this a little bit off air, but we're gonna meet at the airport, and then what are we gonna do? We're gonna go to the Federal Reserve Building. We're gonna go. Where are we going?
Thursday night, man. I'm game for whatever. I do have this great idea, Bob. I got to tell you. Now, since you mentioned that, I came up with this idea, and I wanted to do it in our We Are Change here in Utah, because there's a Federal Reserve office, district, whatever office here in Salt Lake City, right? And it's this big, giant white building. It's got those big white bricks. And I said, you know what we should do? We should go and show an anti-Federal Reserve movie on the side of the Federal Reserve building. And I thought about it. Yeah. I thought, wow, we should actually organize that across the entire spectrum of all the Federal Reserve buildings, and we should show, I don't know, whatever movie that's anti-Federal Reserve on every Federal Reserve building, blast it with some speakers, you know. It's not like you'd be defacing property. You're not touching the property, you know. It would be pretty fun.
I like that idea. Last time we were in Philly for the last Free Your Mind conference, we did go to the Federal Reserve building, and I filmed it. And a couple things came out of that. One, the police officer, the Federal Reserve police officer, notified us that was private property. I said, oh, really? Kind of like the bank is private property, not public and not federal. And anyways, he then told me I couldn't film the building, which we know is BS. And as he was telling me this, somebody walks by, Clint, and I'll never forget this. This is on my YouTube channel. Somebody walks by and they say, "You know why you can't film the building?" And I ask Joe Schmuck, who's walking by us with his family, doing a tour of the historic Philadelphia downtown. I said, "Why is that, Joe Schmuck?" He said, "It's because of the terrorists. They can pinpoint your location." And I looked at him and I said, "Are you kidding me? Have you not heard of Google Earth?"
The terrorists. They're everywhere, man.
Everywhere. They're everywhere. I mean, if anything happens, or if any justification is necessary, it's terrorism. How about this guy who crashed this plane into the Alps? Terrorism. Terrorism.
Well, yeah, man, the Alps are a big target.
Even if they say it's not terrorism, they still bring up terrorism. So it's like it doesn't have to be terrorism. It could be some guy doped up on SSRIs and who knows what else. And they can still, in the same vein, say, "Well, it wasn't terrorism," but they're still saying terrorism. You notice it's still that subliminal.
Well, like you ever see? I mean, if you ever watch, especially the infamous Rudy Giuliani. Jew extraordinaire, mayor extraordinaire, who everybody, by the way, you know, I've said this before, but everybody despised that man that lived in New York before 9/11, which included me. He was one of the most hated people in New York. He was doing things that were just horrible. And what does he say every time he talks? "Oh, terrorism, terrorism this, and terrorist, you know, if it weren't for the terrorists, I wouldn't have been, and the terrorist this, and the terrorist that." It just drives, I want to just slap him silly.
And it's 9/11, too. Every other sentence is 9/11, 9/11. Actually, I think Family Guy on one of the shows did a parody on that, and it showed, you know, several clips of press conferences where they just kept saying 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. And when I confronted Rudolph the Red-Nosed Giuliani, of course, you've seen that video. He came to the University of Florida, and they basically censored the question and answer section, so I had to disrupt the event. His whole claim to fame, he got paid $70,000 to speak to the university, and still now, almost, it was, let's see, 10 years later at that point, or 11 years later, his M.O., his number one M.O., is terrorism. Go ahead.
Well, who paid the $70,000? Does that come out of? I mean, that's tuition for one person for one what, a year?
Sure. I mean, it's the hypocrisy is thick. Who paid for it? The student dollars paid for it, and tax dollars for that matter as well, because it's a public university. We're paying for schmucks like him. We paid, I think, $70,000 for Penn and Teller. I confronted Penn and Teller because of their BS show that they did on when 9/11 truth, for lack of a better term, was getting out. Penn and Teller did this info piece on their BS show about 9/11 where they really highlighted some of the kooky people at the time and did a big hit job on 9/11 truth. And I believe they were some of the major players in misguiding people and sending people in the wrong direction when it came to what really happened only a few years after the actual event. So I called them out, and the guy, Penn, he said that he had never seen buildings collapse before. And when I called him out on that, he later went on Twitter talking about how some crazy kid in the audience went crazy on him about Building 7, and that he had misspoke, and actually he had seen Building 7, and I replied on his Twitter, and then he responded back to me, "Well, now you have it. I've seen Building 7, and I'm going to say it three more times. Building 7, Building 7, Building 7. And I thought to myself, this schmuck is doing the truth the biggest favor it could ever ask for in saying the word Building 7, Building 7, Building 7 over and over again, because all it takes is that one little, you know, light bulb to go off where somebody says, "What's Building 7? And then they go on YouTube and they watch the collapse of this building, and if they have any pulse whatsoever, they'll say, something was up here."
Yeah, I spent so much time focused on the 9/11 thing, and it was, I look back on it and I say it was a good thing. I realized, though, eventually, everything that you're saying, which which is basically that, you see, Bob, what I've learned is not what people want to hear. You know, it's in fact, I'm worried that nobody's going to want to hear what I have to say at the conference, because the reality kind of hurts. But the reality is that we're trying to get, okay, just go with me here, man. You're trying to get government to accuse itself of a conspiracy, right? The problem is that the word conspiracy, the word combination, and the word confederation and federation are the same words. So you're literally trying to get the very source of the conspiracy, of all conspiracy, which is government, period, end of story. Government is the combination. Government is the conspiracy. You're actually trying to get government, really foolishly, I might add, to actually admit that it did something while acting in a conspiracy. The conspiracy started in 1776, wherever you want to go, Constitution, that's when it started. So, I mean, the conspiracy is a living, breathing, fictional entity, and we're sitting here saying, well, we've got all this evidence, and what I figured out, man, after I interviewed, I went to see, what's his global warming guy, I can't remember his name right now, Lord Monckton, and I sat him down because I knew he used to be an investigator. Kind of like the FBI, but in England. And, you know, he proceeded to explain that, look, you know, the only way that you're ever going to get anything done is first to have a dossier, right? You have to give something to an FBI agent so that they can actually investigate it. That doesn't include YouTube videos. That doesn't include anything from anybody who claims to have evidence, because it's all third-hand evidence. There's no chain of custody. Our problem is not that it's not that we don't have the evidence. The evidence is, I mean, it's almost a self-evident thing. The problem is that we don't know how to handle evidence. We don't know the rules of evidence. We don't know the rules of law. We don't know the rules of court procedure. We don't know the chain of custody, the chain of evidence. We don't have a problem with the facts. What we have a problem with is how we've obtained them, how we've kept them, and how we haven't done the proper chain of evidence. We've done nothing right. That's the only problem. We don't have any problem. And one last thing, man, the notion of a conspiracy doesn't exist. There is no conspiracy, because the conspiracy already is government. So if you're going to go to government, you're going to say there's conspiracy. Guess what? The only way a conspiracy can be quote-unquote proven is when a court says there's a conspiracy. To even have a court say that, you have to have a theory and all the evidence that backs the theory. Oh, well, that sounds like a conspiracy theory. Exactly. You need a conspiracy theory to even get into court for the court to ever say that there is a conspiracy. And in order to do that, you have to have the proper chain of custody, a proper chain of evidence. This whole movement, I'm afraid to say, has been one big bust. And I have a feeling that a lot of that was purposeful and controlled.
It's been a bowel movement. You know, that's what it's been.
It's been a controlled opposition, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you on that. We did, many years ago, perhaps when I was a bit more naive, we did send a letter to the FBI, Michael J. Heinbach, under the threat of treason, of misprison.
Misprison, yeah.
Misprison of treason.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a response that wasn't just a form letter, acknowledging the evidence, saying that Richard Gage's presentation, and folks love or hate Richard Gage, that was at the time what we had presented to him. And he said that his presentation was, quote, backed by thorough research and analysis. This was from the head of the FBI's anti-terrorism wing at the time, and that they would be looking into it further. So we thought that was a pretty big story at the time, Clint, that here we sent in a letter under penalty of misprison of treason, and we got this response from this FBI schmuck about it. Nothing's happened. Nothing's happened, you know.
No, because, well, like I said, no one's actually entered anything into the FBI as far as, because, you know, they don't, I don't know how to say this, but they don't get up off their butts to do that kind of research that you're talking about themselves. They have to have permission, first of all, but they have to have a very good reason to do the work. And the only reason, the only way they're going to do that is if you present them with the evidence, so they don't have to look. If they have overwhelming evidence and the chain of custody and the chain of evidence was followed, well, then you're golden. Then they have a duty, if you will, to follow the evidence. But otherwise, man, you got nothing. You got YouTube videos, which they will laugh in your face about. Really?
Sure. I'm with you, man. That's why I look forward to your refreshing take at the Free Your Mind conference coming up in April. Hey, Payman, man. I was talking to Dan off the air, and all of a sudden I said, is that Clint talking to Free Your Mind conference? Let me get on there.
Well, how's ticket sales going, man? I tried to do a conference here in Salt Lake City, worst place you could possibly try to do that kind of conference, and it was miserable failure, although the conference itself was a beautiful thing. It went off without a hitch, but I didn't sell any tickets because I let someone else be in charge of the publicity, and I did everything else, and that's so it just didn't work out. But it went off without a hitch, except for there was very few people in the audience. So I know how tough it is, man.
Well, I'm telling you, we're doing really well. I'm surprised with just how well, pleasantly surprised, I should say, we're doing. We got about, I want to say, 250 tickets sold. So we're halfway there, basically, to where we want to be. And we project that we might get there as far as, you know, a nice, I mean, 250 is still a decent sized crowd.
Yeah.
So if we can really take that to the next level, and we want everyone to come from the Northeast. People are coming in from all around the world, which is exciting. You know, people are coming to hear you speak from Norway. They're coming from, of course, Canada. I didn't know there was even people in Canada until the other day. It was news to me. I always thought it was just a bunch of seals and, you know, Eskimos up there, but.
If I had a choice, honestly, I would probably go up to Canada. You could talk about Canucks all you want, but I'll tell you what, man. There's something about it. There's something real about the people up there. I don't know how to, and compared to Americans. So,
well, Canadian bacon's definitely not real. I mean, how can you call that bacon?
Well, you know, what are you talking about bacon for, Jew?
Listen, I like to eat bacon. It's got, you know, I've read about high protein, good fats, and bacon is a great source of that. And we have a local friend here who's got a pig farm, and he feeds these pigs, you know, acorns. They forage for acorns and watermelons and all that good stuff. And we have homemade bacon on a regular basis here.
Very nice.
So there you go. That's about any conspiracy that I'm working for the Mossad, Clint.
Sheesh.
I'll let you go, brother. I hope your guest joins you soon. If not, I'm sure you got a lot to talk about. And I really do look forward to hanging out with you and hearing what you got to say coming up in a couple weeks, man.
Cool beans. Thanks for coming on, man, and glad to hear the sales are going. Like I said, after my own experience, I always have a big place in my heart for people who are trying to run these things because, you know, it's hard. Getting people interested in anything anymore that's not the Kardashians is pretty hard.
I know. Again, we're juggling 20-plus speakers and a huge venue. It's a lot of things. Great speakers like yourself and people wanting to desperately hear what you got to say and be all right. So I appreciate it, man. Talk to you later.
All right, bud. Take care. but I think it's the 10th, 11th, 12th, folks. FreeYourMindConference.com. Oh, good times. So I've been, I guess we're not going to get KW today, but maybe he'll call in next hour. We'll see. Anyway, if you'd like to call in, I can't think of the phone number, so I'll just say it later. my board op gives me crap about this all the time that I can't remember the damn phone number, and I say all the time, look, listen to all the information I'm telling you. You can't have time to remember a phone number. It's 1-800-313-9443. 313-9443. That's what it is. I actually have to go and check old messages and stuff to find the phone number, and I think that's ridiculous, and I agree, but it's just the way it is. Call in 1-800-310-9443. Interesting little tidbit of research I've been doing, just in the etymology department. Really strange. I we came upon the notion that in Black's Law Dictionary that that hell is actually defined as a legal term in Black's Law Dictionary, and it literally refers, again, the prison for debtors underneath the executure. And, you know, I hadn't really considered too much what that meant on the as far as the term executure before. I do understand, of course, what a debtor is, and I understand that when a debtor can't pay his debts, in the old days, they would go to prison. Our prison, however, is open air. We have been sort of birthed into the nation as debtors who can never pay their debt because the debt is, we talked about that yesterday. It's a charge. It's not something that can be paid necessarily. It's a strange concept, but when you think about that for a moment, you think, well, hell is the prison of the executor. Well, okay. Then we kind of have to define what the executor was. And it's interesting because this whole thing revolves around the game of chess. And I was writing a chapter earlier in the book, which was probably 3 years ago when I was first writing this. I was writing a chapter called basically the legal chessboard and using the chessboard just as an example of, you know, as persons, as citizens, we are sort of given a specific way to act. If I'm a knight, then I can move, I can move up two or three spaces and maybe a one over to the left, one over to the right, or maybe I can move to the left or right a few spaces, but then only one forward or one backward. And that's the extent of my movement. Whereas the queen, in all her glory, can move basically any direction, as many spaces as she wants, because she has royal privilege. Royal privileges. And this brings up the words royal and regal and quite a few other words that have to do with that very notion of the royal privilege. It's really interesting, actually. And what this has to do with is something called ethnocentricity. Now, when we're talking about patriotism, when we're talking about identifying ourselves, hey, I'm an American, I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm a citizen of the United Kingdom, I'm a citizen of England, I'm a citizen here, I'm from Australia, I'm from here, I live here, I am in here. It's just over and over and over. We all have been raised into what is this notion of ethnocentrism. Another word for that similar is acrochronism. Acrochronism. Crone meaning time, of course. But it kind of means, it says acrochronism is the illusion which leads us to think that what we are doing is the culminating point of some great process. The illusion, to be clear, like statism, for instance, constitutionalism, that sort of thing. The illusion which leads us to think that what we are doing is the culminating point of some great process. And, you know, if you say, well, we're the culminating point of, I don't know, things like the great welfare state or the great surveillance state, well, then, yeah, we're an acrochronism, absolutely. We're ethnocentric to it. What is ethnocentrism? Well, it comes from the comes from the word ethno, which means race, but more specifically culture. We've talked about culture before. The cult of culture, but it really means ethos from the Greek, and it means people, nation, class, caste, tribe, a number of people accustomed to living together, and you put centric onto that, ethnocentric. So ethnicity doesn't actually refer to your skin color or to your ethnic quote-unquote background like we all think. That's not what the word actually means. If I say I'm an American, I mean, when you say picture an American, God, what the hell do you picture anymore? Right? I mean, I don't picture a specific skin color or a specific race, et cetera, et cetera. It's a mishmash. It's it's slaves from all colors and races. But when you add centric to ethno, having a center, being very central or centered on, well, that comes from the old words as well, and it's not a good thing. It kind of refers to the source. So something, a right, for instance, that you've obtained as a citizen, obtained from a specific source. The fountainhead, the foundation. So, ethnicity doesn't mean what you think it does. So, I suppose when you're talking about the economy of a place, you're talking about its resources, what it calls its wealth. A country's wealth is called its resource. Well, resources, well, gosh, what does that say about human resource and human resource management? Well, that's the human, the citizen, where's the source of the citizen? Well, it's ethnocentric. It comes from the state. So if you're claiming to be ethnically, let's say, an Indian, well, I don't know how to tell people this, but that means you're a slave of India. If I say I'm ethnically of England and I'm a citizen, I'm literally a slave of England. I mean, that's actually what it means. It's really not, has nothing to do with skin color, at least in a legal sense. So we're all good. We're all going around. We're talking. We're pretending like we're something. I mean, and you know, we give a lot of crap to the Jews in Israel, but you know, after everything I've seen about the Jews in Israel, they are themselves basically, appearingly anyway, seem to be just goyim like us. Goyim is another word for nation or people. So if you're identifying yourself as an Israeli, you're not identifying yourself as a Jew, the free man, the Christian or the Jew. No, you're identifying yourself ethnically to a statism. So I can't sit there and say that these people are this or that. They're just, again, they're just like us. They're fooled into joining a state to be controlled. So it's an interesting thing. When we're talking about royalty or regal, you're talking about the rights and powers of a king, royal privilege, etc. So we're all in that class, in that ethnicity, and we get different privileges from the king. King just means the sovereignty, the people, whatever. So anyway, we'll be back. Stay tuned. In the street. Oh, there's a solution.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils is an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership, and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
Sometimes it's a bit baffling to understand what this unappealing object is all about.
Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems in the form of energy. All our sensory systems. And then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Corporation Nation. I was looking at the this notion of the executor and the chessboard. It's actually pretty fascinating. But what they would call this was reckoning. They were reckoners. Reckon, of course, is in the Bible. It refers to a reckoner was a book of tables used in calculation, something to count, to reckon, to make a computation, etc., etc. A bill is another word for that, an account, a settling of accounts, etc. Had a lot to do with the Jubilee in the Bible. The reckoner of nations was generally called the executor. to break that word down from the Anglo-French, excuse me, exchequer, a chessboard, and from medieval Latin, a chessboard. It all goes back to the same thing, basically. And it really is, if you think about it, a game of chess. There's an old proverb about the guy who says, he, you know, I'll paraphrase. He says in front of the king or whatever, you know, how should the king pay you for your services? Well, fill each square of the chessboard with a grain of rice, and that will be my payment. But each square, you should double the amount of rice on each square. And the king says, well, sure, that doesn't sound so bad. By the time he's done with all 64 squares of the chessboard, he's got a massive, massive amount of rice to 1 plus 2 plus 4 plus 8 plus 16 plus 32 plus 64, and on and on and on, till 64 times whatever. Anyway, it's we can transfer that or sort of imagine that same thing in the current banking system with our current reckoners, our current creditors, if you will. And the executor's basically still there. The chessboard idea refers to the cloth divided in squares that covered a table on which accounts of revenue were reckoned. In other words, counted with counters. And it looked very similar to a chessboard. The word checker, which is the root, variant root of that, means a game of chess. Let's see. I know there's other stuff in here. The word check, as we know, is a call in chess. Checkmate, we know what that means as well. But it all basically all comes back to that word. Well, what do we call a check, folks? What do we use to write a payment out to somebody? We use a check. So, again, it's just a game of chess. We're using literally a check. What happens when we run out of money? It's checkmate, right? yes. So, we got a call, so let's go to the phones. Where did it go? Oh, we don't have a call. I'm sorry. We had a call. It's gone. Jeez. I hate when that happens. 1-800-313-9443. 1-800-313-9443. Feel free to call in. Ah, yes. Good times. We go to checkups, examinations, check this. Check is used a lot. To check actually is a form of repression, of refrainment, of repression, basically, to keep something in check. What better way to keep us in check than to provide us with a limited monetary system that we write checks upon, to repress, to hold back, to check, to restrain, check, confine, to push back. So, that, of course, goes back to the executeur, which is spelled with a Q, the word check with a Q, Q-U-E, still used in England, means check, same check that we have. The word reins also comes from the idea of checking or restraining, repressing something. That's what you use on a horse, to put the horse in check. To rein in means it's a means of control. Let's see, to refrain, restrain, repress, keep in check. To bridle, like a horse, to hold in with a bit. Bit is even a kind of a funny word. It goes back, and all this again can only be possible with the ethnocentricity, with the notion of ethnicity. Ethnicity is really just your ethnic character. In other words, your person, your straw man, your person, your personality within the legal fiction. Now, unfortunately, the word ethnic also means paganism. The word ethnic literally comes from pagan and heathen. So anytime you're claiming to be ethnically from any nation, you know, we've talked about this before too, the word people, I'm ethnically of the people of America, I'm ethnically of the people of Africa, yeah, that means nation, that means goyim. It's so funny. It means pagan. Literally, it means you're not free, you're not under God, you're not doing anything right. Coming from the Latin ethnicus, I guess, and the Greek ethnikos, meaning of or for a nation, national. Adopted to the genius, another word for genius is demon, or customs of a people, particular to a people and peculiar to a people. In other words, be able to be singled out as one of those goy. The ancient grammarians' ethnicity was said to be attached to one suited to the manners or language of foreigners. From ethnos, a band of people living together, nation, people, tribe, caste, class, all the same. Also used of swarms or flocks of animals, properly the people of one's own kind. Now, see, you have the mistaken identity that people only refers to humans. Nope. People is any animals, especially when they're placed into a pen, into a place to hold them, like a farm. Oh, what's another name for a farm? That's right, colony. Oh, yes, plantation. Yes, I remember that. People of one's own kind. Yes, geese are a people. They fly overhead as a people. A socialized group is also called an idiom. I've changed one word. You have idiots. In earlier English, ethnic was used as a noun or a name, in other words, meaning a heathen, a pagan, one who is not a Christian or Jew, dating back to 1400 or so. Modern use, of course, we only use it because we have no idea what we're saying as to be a member of an ethnic group. We don't seem to realize what we mean when we say that. We think it's because of our racial attitudes or racial looks, appearance, but it really has nothing to do with that. It's how we've been trained in society. Oh, man. The real translation, though, of the word ethnic goes to the word goyim, which is the plural of goy, nation. Goy. Nation, goy, goyim, nation. Are you getting it? Especially of non-Israelites, hence especially Gentile nations. A foreign nation not worshiping the true God. Ethnikos. Savoring of the nature of pagans. Alien to the worship of the true God. The pagan, the Gentile. Classical sense of a peculiar to a race or nation. And when it says peculiar, it's not saying, oh, well, I can automatically see this guy's Chinese. I can automatically see this guy's of a Japanese persuasion. It's not talking about that, folks. It's talking about being under the ideals, the morals, or lack of morals. It's talking about being under the law, the customs, the language, specifically, of that nation, that ethnicity. Very different than what we've been led to believe. Or at least myself, maybe you're smarter than me, I don't know. Cultural groups. Cult. So it's a cult. Not, I mean, it's not like you grow up as a eating sushi. It's not like you grow up eating hot dogs at the ballpark. Excuse me, I should say it's not like you're born in that fate flavor. You become that ethnic group. You're taught that. You don't become a fan of World Wrestling Federation because you're American. I dare say why you could be a fan of that, but I won't. That of racial, cultural, or a national minority group. Thus, when we say ethnic cleansing, what do we really mean? Is it really about the quote-unquote race, or is it about the culture? Well, if you're ethnically cleansing quote-unquote Christians, like they did in Rome, feeding them to the lions, I don't think you're doing it because they're a specific color or a specific... ethnic, you're doing it because these people have a belief that is opposed to yours and that will not allow you to control them. That's what ethnic cleansing boils down to. Goy, of course, same thing, gentle, non-Gentile, non-Jew, people are a nation. See, we're just so fascinated by ourselves being a people that we never realize what it actually means. It's kind of scary. Oh, let's go to Mark. Mark in Florida, welcome.
Welcome, Clint. Thank you for letting me step into your world.
Absolutely. What's going on?
Well, you got these words, and it seems, and I'll choose the word for my discussion, the citizen. So how's that different than an apple pie? I mean, what does it mean to anybody if I can't say, yeah, I'm a citizen? Does that mean a guy with a badge and a gun gets to point a gun at me and, well, you're not a citizen, so he can kill me, or you are a citizen, so he can kill me? What I'm asking is, what does it have to do with anything, what anybody calls themselves, except there's a guy with a gun that says, ooh, the magic word is citizen, bang, you're dead.
Well, to me, it refers to the incorporation of man into a fictional state of being. So it literally refers to you not, or no longer referring to yourself in the first person. You start referring to yourself in the third person. I am something I am not.
I disagree.
I have specific rights. Well, that's the definition of citizen, is to denizen or to enfranchise somebody into a corporation. When they took the slaves and set them quote-unquote free, we all think that means they were suddenly just free to roam about. No, that means to enfranchise into the corporation, into the state of citizenship. So what do you disagree?
Because that's the
great fallacy.
But the thing is, so how can anybody apply that to me just because I say I'm a citizen? Does that mean some guy gets to boss me around?
It does. That's the thing. And I used to think the same thing, man. Don't get me wrong. I'm right there with you. Until I realized that the second that I claim to be property of the state, then I am property of the state. In other words, I'm acting in a capacity that the state can tell me what to do because I'm operating in its vehicle, in its vessel.
Hold on. Who says is property of the state? What man decided that, oh, I read the Bible, I'm going to apply it to you, or I read a code, I'm going to apply it to you? Who is this stranger to apply anything to me? For what reason does he get this ability to apply?
I understand the question, and the question is it's very hard to see the answer, but once you do, it all makes sense. The answer to the question is yourself. You, by declaring yourself as the name and the surname, the state name, by your parents putting it into a birth contract and you never realizing that you can get out of it, any benefit that you collect equals an obligation. Anything. If you have Social Security, if you use your name and your number for a job, you're acting in that person. You don't have a choice in that matter. You've voluntarily entered into a state of voluntary servitude. Slavery.
But that's absurd. That's absurd.
It's not absurd. Absurd because you don't want to believe it.
No, that may be the way liars and thieves like to apply things to you, but it's absurd to say that they can't apply it to you except that it's at the barrel of a gun. It's not, it doesn't matter if they called you, like I said, apple pie. You're an apple pie. We have authority over apple pies. It's so absurd. It boils down to the barrel of a gun. Because they
I'm not disagreeing
they
with
say
you.
This word, they say this word applies. So it's not that you volunteered to do anything. Sure, I asked Mom and Dad to bring me into this world. I volunteered. There's no such thing as volunteered. I volunteered.
Right, and I know what you're saying, but again, you're using your own version of the word volunteer. You have to know what their version is because you're stepping into their fictional world. This is what I'm saying. If you're stepping into a fictional novel and you're assuming the character of a fictional character in that novel, then you're going to have to play by the rules of the writer of the fiction. It's that simple. So voluntary, when we come back, voluntary doesn't mean what you think it does because it's a term of their art, not a term of reality. So hang on, we'll be back.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affords no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. escapeharassment.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
A year ago, I was realizing that I was in serious problems with my heart. You know, I had these chest pains and so on. I realized that I had to do something and quick. I didn't want to go the medical route. So I started in doing some investigating, and somebody told me about these heart drops. I got on the heart drops prescribed dosage. Within 2 weeks, I immediately started seeing the results. This is working. I'm going to stick with it. I can't deny the fact that when I got on the heart drops initially, there was immediate help, an immediate turnaround.
To get your Extendovite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from takefromcaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at takefromcaesar.us.
Welcome back. We're talking about volunteerism. And my friend, you know, we're talking with Mark in Florida. I understand where you're coming from, man. I used to have the same opinions. Now, opinions that come from slaves don't really mean much. Opinions that come from employees in contract don't really mean much, unfortunately. If you are in a situation where you are utilizing a person, again, a fictional character playing a part, then the word volunteer must be considered by what they define it as, not what you define it as. If you're playing the part of something, if you're going to participate in something, you come in my house, you play by my rules. And house is another word for government, another word for church. They are the same thing. Volunteer is a person who gives his services without any express or implied promise of remuneration. One who intrudes himself into a matter which does not concern him, or one who pays the debt of another without request when he is not legally or morally bound to do so, and when he has no interest in to protect in making such payment. Now, believe it or not, that's a perfect definition of what we do. One who acting on his own initiative pays debt of another without invitation, compulsion, or the necessity of self-protection. Now, debt comes in a lot of forms. Debt is simply an obligation. So, when you... let me just ask you a few questions just to get where you're at here. Mark, are you married?
No.
Did you ever get married?
Yes, I have been.
Okay, and what name did you use when you got married?
The one my mother gave me when I was born.
All right. So and with that, to prove that name, what did you do?
I don't recall proving anything.
Did you get a marriage license?
Yeah, we did the marriage license thing. Yeah.
All right.
Married in front of a justice of the peace.
All right. So you got married in front of a fictional judge, a legal judge, which means opposed to God, and you showed an ID, I suppose, to get a marriage license, permission from the state to marry. You don't think that was a voluntary act on your part?
I think it was a programmed response on how to do something like build a toilet.
You can put it any way you want to put it, but the legal definition of volunteer thus applies to you. You voluntarily went and said, may I have permission to take this woman as my wife, make the state a third-party contractor in this incorporation of two names, make one corporation out of it, where the state has ruling authority over all transactions and literally owns my children. That's what you did. That was a voluntary act.
It was without that information that you just said.
Oh, I know.
Took place.
I know, but there is in their law, in their world, which is built in absolute corruption, which you're voluntarily entering, there is no need for you to know that. The fact that you are volunteering for it and acting in the part, using the name, getting permission, getting the license, getting married, entering into a contract, that is an act of volunteerism. You've done it. And therefore, the law in their world says that you must know the law, and that knowing the law and being under the law are the same thing. See, that's the problem. We want so hard to believe that it's fraud, but if we're acting in the fraud, we can't call it fraud. That's the problem. Stay on there, man. We'll be back.
With financial uncertainty.